From the land to Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of June 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll get an update on some production agriculture facts you'll want to be aware of as they're related to weeds. We'll talk with Aaron Hager, weed scientist from the U of I, and insects. We'll talk with field crops entomologist Nick Sider from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I as well. And then as we turn our attention to the end of our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather in Chicago and think about how this year might be like 2004 or maybe like 2003. You'll want to hear that discussion as we wrap up our time together on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn for the day at $7.30 and a quarter, down a penny. December 2 3/4 higher, finished at $6.94 and a quarter for the new crop corn. July soybeans 39 cents higher, at $17.29 and a quarter. In November at $15.41 and three quarters, up 26.5 cents. Bean meal futures at $4.14.90, up $2.20. In the bean oil, 81.44, $3.33 higher. Wheat futures July soft red up 17 at $10.58 and a quarter, and the hard red July at $11.43 and a half, up 15 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures $1.22 and a half higher at $134.12 and a half. Feeders at $172.95, up $3.22 and a half cents. And lean hogs down 25 cents per 100 pounds at $112.17 and a half cents. Crude oil $116.74, $1.48 higher, and the wholesale price of gas up 8 6/10 of a cent. It's at $4.19 and 8 tenths of a cent per gallon. Some of the outside markets, including the Dow at 33,071 points, that's about 272 points higher. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. It's been a volatile week in Chicago. Tell me about it, please.
Well, you know, I mean, you come in here on Tuesday, and obviously it's kind of a rough day. Corn down, you know, 23, 24 cents. Beans down in the 40s, you know, and then you turn around on you know, what would be a turnaround Tuesday, but on Wednesday, and you know, you're hopeful that you'll get some of that back. Beans got a few of that back, 7 or 8 cents, you know, and corn absolutely took it on the chin again. And then you come in Thursday, and beans up. Pretty close to wiping out the weekly losses so far. Corn just didn't do much of anything. Fairly unmotivated trade. It sure looks like we continue to see another day of a spread unwinding type situation where some of the long corn, short bean spreads continue to be liquidated. Wheat actually had a pretty decent day today, but I mean, it's definitely taking it on the chin this week. Been an interesting trade for sure. Excellent ethanol numbers today. Best we've seen in a year and a half, actually. So I do think there's some good things going on, but by all means, this corn market definitely looked, as far as the board went, looked pretty sick today.
Well, what pushed the beans higher? Was it just the idea that the bean planting in North Dakota is so far behind that it won't catch up, or was there something else afoot?
That's definitely being talked about, you know, and obviously this bean crop is going to go in the ground a little later than what we prefer. We all know that early planted beans are by all means preferred as far as, you know, your larger yielding type situations are concerned. You know, we're not going to have near as many beans that are flowering as of the maximum sunlight date coming up here this month. Now, one thing, though, you got to remember is yesterday we sold some beans on the morning wire. Today we had 352,000 tons for delivery to Pakistan. I don't think anybody had that on their bingo card coming into this week. And so there's no question that the demand for these beans right now, Todd, These old crop beans, I've been talking to you about this for a while. I think that these things are going to be razor thin as far as how tight we are. I think that basis is going to be extremely interesting moving forward. I think basis will be awfully strong for corn, but I think relatively speaking, beans, we're going to run about as thin as what we could possibly run on a year where the bean crop went in the ground late. And so you've got to assume the harvest is certainly going to start later than normal. We're going to need every one of those acres that the March intention showed us, first of all. And second of all, we're really going to need Mother Nature to throw us one heck of a scheme because if we can't get good weather this summer, I think that it's going to be devastating, as far as what our total bushels available are going to be, which will certainly have a big impact on price.
Now, a couple of things to keep in mind as we go through the month of June. The weekly crop progress reports will begin to show on how much is in the ground planted, no matter where we are, that it's wrapping up. And that's because as those folks go out, and mostly those aren't farmers, they're extension and farm credit and other folks involved in agriculture will make some assessments that the ground simply will not be planted. And so there could be some big jumps, especially in Minnesota and North Dakota. It is not a survey, and I did talk to Mark Schleusner, state statistician from Illinois this week. He said, be careful with that because really it's not a survey. So that's just subjective as to what will be in the ground. However, USDA is surveying this month farmers for the end of the month June acreage figures. There will also be a grain stocks number there. I suppose we should start to talk about that. Will there be changes, do you think, in those numbers based on the lateness of the planting of this crop?
Yeah, I mean, as you, I think we both agree that the June report typically isn't a huge deal. I don't want to underestimate any report. But whenever we get to the end of June report, there's no question that that's going to be a big one on acreage. What kind of adjustments might we see? Here's the thing, Todd. I've talked to several people in the industry that I trust as far as knowing, how much corn are we selling, how much beans are we selling, as far as seed is concerned. And what I continue to hear is that they didn't see the switchover in your prime corn areas that they assumed that they would see. And then in the upper Midwest, there was a decent amount of acres that won't get planted to corn. And so do I think that that means corn acres are going down? I can't envision that. We've got to understand that, maybe those March 31st numbers, obviously, that was a pretty darn good guess from the USDA, but maybe they were low to begin with. I don't know. So my personal opinion is maybe you get to 90, 90 and a half. I don't know. I just don't think you're going to pick up a bunch of corn acres. Mother Nature did not cooperate. The market did everything that it would have ever been expected to do, but Mother Nature just simply wasn't having it. And so I think that your bean acres are probably going to be steady. I don't think that if corn goes up a little bit, that beans are going to go down. I just don't see that happening. You've got high prices for both, so you've got to assume that total acreage is going to go up. And so I'm assuming that we're going to pick up a few acres on beans, and I think we'll pick up a few acres on corn. But I'll tell you, that's going to be a big report. And I think a producer has to understand that if we came in and did get a bearish number that I'm not necessarily expecting on your acreage, if crop ratings are as good as what I think they might be, in some of the parts of the U.S. that are big producing areas, you could be looking at it being really tough to rally a market if you get a bearish acreage number. So I certainly want to have some of these good prices locked in. And Todd, someone's going to say, hey, geez, we've had a rough week on corn. When's this market ever going to rally back up? And you want to just say, hey, why don't you stop and look at the board? Because you're still 6.94 and a quarter. And I know you're 70 cents off the highs. I'm well aware of that. But Todd, how many times have we had a chance to sell corn up here, in the month of June, with a crop that looks the way that this Illinois crop looks right now in Indiana and parts of Iowa? I know parts of Iowa are a struggle, but bottom line is, Todd, we've got to have a decent amount of our risk quantified going into that acreage report.
I take it that, like us, you've been hearing from the weather folks you talk to that June looks cool and maybe a little wet, and conditions will be pretty good for the month. At least that's what I was hearing in your earlier comments.
Yeah, I mean, most of the forecasts are showing that If there's going to be some sort of a major stress area, of course, it's probably going to be in the Western Corn Belt, far Western Corn Belt, at least for now. I know some of the newer models come out over the next few days, and so actually Eric Snodgrass is going to come on our webinar on Monday for Ag Market, and it's going to be very interesting because he said he's going to feel a whole lot more confident making summer weather predictions after some of the new models come out, based upon this mass of water up there, just south of Alaska. I'm not real technical in my weather terms here, but he's gone over this with us a couple of times, and there's a few dynamics at play here that could have a very large impact. Right now, as good a start as what we've gotten, if we could just have a decent amount of participation from Mother Nature, I think we could be looking at a pretty special crop in my part of the world.
Indeed. You also mentioned the middle of the month, actually the very beginning of the month here, not very far away now. The monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates, any numbers you think will change out of that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Brazil crop is addressed as far as corn's concerned. Most people are saying it needs to be trimmed. It's still going to be a rather large crop, much bigger than a year ago. But what's the USDA going to do as far as world exports are concerned, as far as the U.S.? Whenever you start talking about some of this out of the Black Sea region being available for export potentially, it certainly can kind of change the dynamics there. The other thing is going to be, what are they going to say, for old crop, new crop, as far as bean carryouts concerned, corn as well, but more so beans. Todd, I mean, I think right now there's folks out there throwing some awfully low numbers out there as far as bean stocks are concerned, and I think that they're justified. So you got to be careful to assume that that report's not going to have a little bit of an opportunity to move the market.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. Just one item for the agricultural news segment for the day. Secretary Tom Vilsack from USDA announced what he's calling a new food system transformation framework that builds on earlier programs and adds some new ones to help producers, consumers, and rural communities, he says. The framework is aimed at lowering costs, boosting competition, and building supply chain resilience against COVID and Russia's war on Ukraine, and as the White House fights an uphill battle against inflation in this election year. Here's Secretary Vilsack at Georgetown University yesterday.
I believe a transformed food system will deliver a better deal for farmers, ranchers, and growers, and consumers through more new and better markets, also stimulating our rural economy. I believe a transformed food system will also lead to better health outcomes for Americans by increasing access to healthy, locally grown foods, lowering healthcare costs for all. I believe a transformed food system will sustainably produce more food, allowing the United States to meet its global responsibility through exports and donations.
And on climate, the Secretary of Agriculture introduced a new initiative for ag and forestry.
This initiative is going to provide $1 billion to accelerate more rapid adoption of climate-smart agriculture and forestry practices, more tools to accurately measure and verify the climate benefits of reduced greenhouse gases and of increases in stored carbon of certain climate-smart practices, and more markets through which climate-smart commodities can be sold at a higher value, benefiting producers.
Some framework programs totaling more than $425 million to add meat processing capacity already up, and others, he says, are coming.
Finally, using ARP funds, USDA will fund the Meat and Poultry Processing Expansion Program. We initially announced $150 million in grants. This is going to grow to $325 million by the end of the year. These grant monies will help to build new independent processing capacity or expand existing independent processing capacity.
Some $900 million will go for worker training, food safety certification, and cold food storage and distribution, plus $300 million to help farmers transition to organic production. Other funds will help underserved communities and consumers in so-called food deserts, $155 million. Hundreds of millions more will go to reduce food waste, and with it, methane and carbon emissions, healthy food, school nutrition, and senior farmer market initiatives. urban ag, and SNAP modernization as well. Still, Vilsack says the next farm bill, now in discussion, must continue to build on these investments.
We believe the farm bill presents a critical opportunity to advance a new vision of our transformed food system we're discussing today. A vision that includes a fairer and more competitive food system, consistent with access to safe, healthy, nutritious, and affordable food. One that includes voluntary incentives in climate smart agriculture and forestry, providing competitive advantage for American producers. One that creates new opportunities for small and mid-sized and underserved producers, and for real good job creation in rural communities.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack speaking at Georgetown University. We have a couple of items from the crop scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois this week. We'll start with soil residual herbicides and how they're being used post-emergence at the moment and some of the things that you might want to pay attention to. There are a couple of reasons to use a soybean soil residual herbicide post-emergence along with a foliar spray. First, it will help reduce the development of foliar herbicide-resistant weeds, says Aaron Hager from University of Illinois. And then, the extension weed scientist says there are the supply chain issues. The idea here is to use the soil residual to eliminate a second application of the short-supplied foliar herbicides.
But we always caution folks that you're simply adding that soil residual herbicide in the foliar applied application does not always guarantee that it's going to work effectively, because regardless of when that application of a residual herbicide is made, and by that we mean either at planting time or in this post-emergence scenario, we have to have some way to get that material incorporated. And of course, after the crop has been planted, after it has emerged, we're highly dependent then on getting precipitation to move that material into the soil solution. The ideal scenario would be we'd make the application and somewhere between, within about 7 days, we get anywhere between half to 1 inch of precipitation. That would be the ideal scenario.
There are other factors at work, too. The amount of residue in the field and the size of the crop matters. Heavy residue may require more rainfall to incorporate the residual herbicide. The residual may also have a pre-harvest timing interval or a growth stage restriction beyond which it will damage the soybean. These both will be on the label. Well, now that the crops are in the ground, it's time for farmers to pay close attention to some of the insect pests that might be in their fields. The insects farmers will need to be watching for across their crops will vary, of course, says University of Illinois field crops entomologist Nick Sider.
For instance, if you have a field with a lot of residue and you've had a lot of moisture in that area, you might be looking for slug damage, and that would be in particular in the southern third of the state where we have a lot of no-till production. If you're in a situation where maybe your burn-down herbicide wasn't very effective, maybe you're planting into kind of a hairy situation in terms of broadleaf weeds in particular, cutworm damage might be the first thing that crosses your mind that you'll be on the lookout for. If you're following some grassy weeds or maybe a grass cover crop, then perhaps armyworm will be your first target.
There are a variety of insect issues that can pop up in June. The real question is not if they'll pop up, but rather when to do something about it, says Sider.
You really want to learn to be able to distinguish actual yield-limiting damage from more cosmetic chewing and feeding, which we see a lot of this time of year. And really in soybean and especially in corn, the general rule right now is that if stand is threatened, then you have a chance to have a yield-limiting pest. But if you're not losing stand, if you're just seeing a little bit of chewing here and there, which we see in almost every field every year, that's a situation where you're probably going to outgrow that damage. You're probably not going to suffer any lasting effects from just a little bit of cosmetic chewing.
Therefore, it's best, says Sider, to focus on insects that can reduce stand. These include the black cutworm, armyworm, and slugs. Bean leaf beetles can be a problem, but generally are not, unless bean pod model virus is also present. So far, the Illinois Extension entomologist says the insect damage he's been hearing about across the state has been relatively minor.
Maybe those will start coming in a little more rapidly now that planting progress is starting to get wrapped up and maybe folks have a little bit more time to actually look at what's been planted. But again, when we have those nice, warm, favorable conditions for early season growth as we've had in much of the state, that really helps to alleviate the insect problems that we see this time of year.
That was Nick Sider, a field crops entomologist at the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Let's check now the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. Find them online at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. We'd better talk about Corn Belt weather. Give me your assessment of the coming week and maybe a look at the month of June if you have one.
Well, it's going to be pretty cool here for about 10 days. And it's interesting to look at how cool it's going to be because if you check out the records going back in time, this is very likely going to end up being the coolest June in more than 18 years across the seven-state Corn Belt. And you might be a little surprised to hear that, being it's only June 2nd. But the reason we have a little bit of confidence in it is simply because it's going to be a lot cooler than normal over the next 10 days. And if you look back at the records, there have not been very many cool Junes going all the way back through 2005. The only June that was unseasonably cool, and when we say that, we only mean by 1 to 2 degrees from normal, it was 2018. And being 1 to 2 degrees below normal is not a significant number. You need to be 2, 3, 4, or 5 degrees below normal to have a cool June. And just based on the way the first 10 days of June are shaping up, we're going to have a shot at beating that 2018 record, which would then put us up next to 2004 or 2003.
Those are analogous years that are pretty interesting. 2004, a very good year. I don't know what you've thought about as it relates to the summer months, but do you have a discussion point on those areas?
Well, we did check out some of the records going even further back to try and see if a cool June correlates to U.S. corn and soybean yields. And there's just not much there. There's a few different reasons for that. Number one is that it really matters what happens later on in the season, say the very end of the month and then throughout July and August and maybe even a bit into September. So what's happening now is just kind of the very beginning of what's going to ultimately determine your yield. So if we're cool now, we can still have big weather changes ahead and still have either a very good crop or a very poor one. For example, if you look at what happened in 2004, like you mentioned, it stayed very cool throughout July and August, and there was a lot of rain. And because of that, we have one of the best corn and soybean crops on record. But if you go over to 2003, things didn't shape up quite as well. Part of that was due to the aphid infestation that happened in August of that month. But there are some other years when you go back in time when you see these big changes between a cool June and then a hotter July and August. And that's why it's just a little too early to determine. There's just not a correlation between weather right now and weather a month or two from now. And there's also not a real strong correlation between yields because of that same reason.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
That is Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. Find them online at tstorm.net. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media and is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily program. Just click and play from the website, hit the podcast link, and you'll find a way to subscribe to the podcast in places like Apple and Google and Spotify and Amazon Music and oh, so many more. And you'll also find on our website information from the Ag Economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our theme music is produced by Logan County, Illinois Farmer, performed by him as well. His name is Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.